Do you remember Xbox avatars? No? Then it's your fault they're going away. Plus, another longtime leader at Sony announced he's leaving the company and taking Xbox avatars with him. Tonight is December 1st, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore, what would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Can't talk. Eating leftovers. That's fine. You can still watch. You can still type. Mike Death is eating some carne asada quesadillas, you know, because Thanksgiving exists down there. It was just Thursday down there. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another post-Thanksgiving edition here in the United States of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the first night of December, which means, you know, people are putting lights up all around in this area, at least. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape the show live each and every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. So come join us and interact with the show directly. But this is a podcast. So if you want to join our Discord server instead and you can interact that way, vognetwork.com/Discord. That is where I am. And when we are kind of in the slow news week, the slow news period, now like all the games are out, now it's really just Game Awards and stuff. I do want to hear what you want to have talked about on the show. So if you want to do that, vognetwork.com/Discord. Once again, it's a very low traffic server, as we don't ping you. It's not going to be overwhelming here. And Mike Deft does say, because Mike Deft is in Mexico, says some people here do celebrate, and I'm using quotey fingers, celebrate Thanksgiving down here, but it's mostly Turkey Day or pre-Christmas test dinner night. That's amazing. That's the way you should do it. And that way you can have some of the fun we have up here, because we take some of your holidays and change them up into things that we think they should be, and they are not. Cinco de Mayo is not what it is in Mexico. Just saying. And Rob Roberts says Friendsgiving is the real holiday, and I will probably have to start participating in that. Or I probably will be starting to participate that very soon myself, every year. And not to take it down too much a little bit, but unfortunately, both my parents have passed, so my family's basically gone. So like, I have not spent the holidays with family for the past couple years. And it's going to happen at some point. The older you get. And it happened to me a little bit sooner than other people my age, because my parents had me very, very late in their lives. So my parents were about 10 to 12 to 15 years older than all my friends' parents, just because of how it worked. So, maybe I'll be able to do some Friendsgiving. I've got holiday plans that are pretty non-traditional for the Christmas holiday, because, once again, No family. And my wife's family is like up where it snows. And so I'm not going to go there. Why would I go there? We'll probably go there at some point, like next year or something, and start doing that. But for right now, it's just me and my wife. So at least I'm not completely alone, but it's just us. Friendsgiving is actually is a lot of fun, and it's a great thing. So if you do have local friends that are kind of in the same boat, then feel free to reach out and, you know, try to get something to happen, or do it over Zoom, you know, cook something over Zoom. I also will, because I've got to say it on the podcast, Friday night I went to a sporting event for my alma mater. It was apparently a game for the ages. I say apparently because I totally did not leave with 5 minutes left in the game. I totally was not halfway home by the time the game ended. I none of that happened. I did not leave early and any of that for the game of the, because like they just scored a touchdown. The nerds just scored a touchdown. They were going to destroy the Hedges when they won. I didn't want to see that. So we got out and stuff. So I know SSJ runner Matt in chat is very disappointed with me. But so I did not actually see the epic part of the game. I saw the 3.5 quarters leading up to it. But Georgia Tech still lies and cheats and dogs on top. So this week after that, going into the Friendsgiving topic about that, after all that, is I was fortunate enough to be able to hop in with Dragon Con and the Dragon Con digital media track. And I was on the Be Awesome Together podcast, the Friendsgiving edition. And this was on Wednesday night. It happened very, very, very late. It was like, I was like, hey, I could do this. And it was like 6 o'clock and it was like 2 hours later. So that's why you didn't get that much advance notice. But I was on with Tyra Burton, who is the social media manager for the Dragon Con digital media track. We talked about things going on at Dragon Con, people we have met at Dragon Con, what we're thankful for in content creation. It is more, you know, kind of just us talking about that type of stuff. And at that event, I did actually announce kind of, sort of, because anything can happen, obviously. But as it stands right now, I have been invited back to be part of Dragon Con main programming. So, you know, obviously anything can happen in the next 9 months between now and Dragon Con, but things are looking really good. I've had some very productive conversations with the head of the main programming team over at Dragon Con, which is different than the digital media track. Dragon Con is like 30 to 40 different departments that all work independently of each other. It's kind of interesting. But I have been asked back. And so I'm going to be very excited to do that and maybe have that open some other opportunities in 2025 that I haven't had before. And so that's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm very grateful for that. And check that out. It is on the Be Awesome Together podcast. You can find it on their YouTube channel, which is DC Digital Media. It will be linked in the show notes here. Yeah, they do those every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. They rotate through who's on it, and I kind of come in and fill in when I can and when other people can't be there. Mike Deft watched some of it. We did see Mike Deft, and it was a good talk. It's kind of nice that I can go in and be like, oh yeah, that's one of my people that I brought in. You know, saying, hey, I can bring in people. So let's get into the news that's going on this week. Obviously, if you notice, I'm not talking about the Game Awards. I'm going to wait for it to be over and see what happens. We're probably not going to stream it live or co-stream it here on VOG just because of schedules. There's a lot of company holiday parties going on, especially where my wife works. And one of them is on the night of the Game Awards. So I probably will not be able to actually watch it live. And I will just recap it a little bit later. The news that I wanted to talk about is about another influential member of gaming who did a lot more good than we give him credit for, and also somebody who kind of did a lot of things behind the scenes but didn't have the same kind of love from the fans overall. I'm kind of comparing him a little bit to Satoru Iwata. And Sony's Iwata, essentially, in terms of what impact he's made at the company, is leaving the company, and that's Shohei Yoshida. So Kotaku reports that Sony's head of independent development at PlayStation and longtime game development leader for the console maker, Shohei Yoshida, is leaving the company after over 3 decades. He helped produce some of the PlayStation's earliest hits before moving on to help lead the platform's powerhouse first-party studios across multiple console generations. The Sony veteran said during an interview with the PlayStation blog on Tuesday, quote, "Yes, I have an announcement to make. I'm leaving Sony Interactive Entertainment on January 15th, 2025. It's like announcing the launch date of a new game. Something I haven't done for a long time," unquote. The industry veteran said that while he will no longer be at Sony, he still plans to work in games in some capacity moving forward. So he's not retiring. This is not a retirement. This is just a, I'm leaving Sony. During the interview, Yoshida recounted what it was like to, in the earliest days of the PS1 era and what it was like trying to convince publishers and studios to take a chance on making games for Sony's first console. While he was the executive producer on early games like Crash Bandicoot Warped and The Legend of Dragoon, he later moved into leadership roles across the business group, eventually becoming president of Sony Computer Entertainment Worldwide Studios. He told the PlayStation podcast that Journey's release in 2012 on PS3 as a download-only indie hit that went on to win Game of the Year's was a career highlight. He said, quote, "But that game won Game of the Year against all these AAA titles. I think for the first time in the industry, the creator, Jennifer Chen, did a talk at the summit, and he talked about a letter he received from a girl who lost her father, and she thought about her father, and she was able to move on with her life. The whole audience stood up and the whole room was filled with happiness and an amazing feeling that this small game could have such a big impact on people's lives," unquote. Journey really was one of the first kind of small games. I'm not going to really call it indie because I think it was still published by Sony, so it's not an indie title, but it wasn't built like a AAA game. It was built more like an indie title. Even though it absolutely is not an indie title, it was published by Sony, which is a very much a first party. But that was kind of the first one that actually said, no, like, great games can come out of the indie scene. And the console makers started actually making it easier for indie game makers to make games for their consoles. And some consoles were a little bit more harder to work with. I'm looking at you, the Wii U. In order to get their games on. But now they have noticed that, you know, you need to foster those indie studios, even if they are published by a AAA publisher, which is a lot of them are. But you need to look into those type of games and finance those type of games, because not everything needs to be a multi-million dollar blockbuster type of game. And Journey was, I think, one of the first ones that really drove that point home. And now we have Balatro as a Game of the Year nominee. And everybody's like, why? It's a card game. I have not actually played Balatro yet. I know the gimmick. I know why. Like, I'm not shocked. I just haven't played it yet. Mike Def played Balatro this week. Did you win? Have you won yet? The executive was also well known for his development expertise and design sense. This is where some of my Iwata comparisons come in. In one pivotal moment during the documentary about the making of 2018's God of War, Yoshida's harsh criticism of an in-development build of the game became a make-or-break moment of the now-acclaimed reboot. He eventually stepped down from being the head of Worldwide Studios in 2019, at which point then Guerrilla Games studio head Herman Holst stepped into the role amid a reshuffling of PlayStation leadership. Holst is now co-CEO of PlayStation alongside Hideki Nishino. Yoshida's announcement marks the second major departure in PlayStation over a year. After previous Sony Interactive Entertainment CEO Jim Ryan retired last spring, it will also leave the console maker without one of its most high-profile execs and visible faces in the community with a long track record of popularity among fans. He's perhaps best known for his part in an infamous E3 2013 clip demonstrating how games are shared on the PS4, a stunt that kicked off Sony's current high-end console dominance. And if you don't know what he's talking about, this is what they're talking about here.
This is how you share your games on PS4.
So that was Shohei Yoshida, and it says step one, sharing the game. He's holding a physical copy of the PlayStation 4. He's handing it to the other person. And that's how you share a game. I remember that because I was there. That was one of the last E3 press conferences I was attending, was E3 2013. I went to E3 2014 and attended, I believed it was the Sony press conference again. They were the ones that always let us in. I was actually there in the room, and that was a masterful moment. Because what, and Mike Deft and Chad already said this as well, because I've brought this up a couple times. That was masterful because they did that. And yes, the entire arena went wild. Yes, they used an arena. They used, I think it was the Los Angeles Sports Arena, which is not Staples Center or whatever they're calling it now. It was, I think, where USC plays basketball, maybe. I think that's what it is. It's on USC's campus. But anyway, we were in the arena. And I specifically remember for that, I was actually in the upper deck. In 2014, we were on the floor because we were actually media. But I was upper deck in 2013 with a colleague from another website. And they were announced that, and everybody goes amazing. SJR Matt says the forum. It might have been the forum. I honestly can't remember. It was one of, I think it was on USC's campus, though. I think it's that one. But anyway, so they announce it. And everybody goes, because Microsoft had on the Xbox One said it was going to be always online. And that way, you know, if when you bought a game, it was tied to your console and you couldn't sell it and, you know, stuff like that, because they were still trying to do that. And they needed an always online connection to make sure that that worked. But what Microsoft wanted to do was actually implement a used system where you could trade games over the internet and your digital games. And in order to do that, your console needed to be always online. And everybody hated that because they didn't want to have their console always be online. In 2013, we didn't have constant internet connections in many parts of the world. Now, guess what? Your consoles have to be connected to the internet. Like, a lot of your devices have to be connected to the internet, unfortunately. So then, literally, like, the next thing they announced after that, we're all, like, euphoric. We were posting on Twitter because, yes, Twitter existed in 2013, and it was good. And, you know, everybody was euphoric. We were all posting. We're like, I can't believe they did that. And then they were like, oh, and PlayStation Plus, here's the things about PlayStation Plus on the PS4 online multiplayer. And they literally announced 2 minutes later that PlayStation Plus, which was only for free games and cloud savings on the PS3. On the PS4, you needed PlayStation Plus to play online multiplayer games. You did not need anything to play PS3 online multiplayer games. Only on the PS4. They slid that in a minute, like 1 or 2 minutes after that video that I just showed you aired. And it was like just a very quick PowerPoint. It was a bullet point on the next slide. The person on stage mentioned it. They even mentioned it again 2 minutes later to reiterate. And I still, for days, because I was doing this podcast in 2013, I had for days people arguing with me saying, Sony wouldn't make you pay to play online multiplayer. That's a Microsoft thing. Sony wouldn't do that. Sony would never say that. I'm like, they literally did twice. And people just, they were still so euphoric. Ha ha, they destroyed Microsoft. Sony's so much better at Microsoft. It's got free online multiplayer and you can share your games and blah, 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 blah. And no, but it was so expertly put in there. And I even talked to at E3 in the Sony booth, because I was able to talk to somebody from there, because we were still considered legitimate media back then. And I talked to them and they did say they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew that the online multiplayer wouldn't be received well. And so they put it as close to the memeable sharing thing as possible. So it wouldn't have as much of a ripple effect, and it absolutely worked. And they were like, yeah, no, that was definitely on purpose. We knew that was going to be unpopular, and it was, but because you could share games, people didn't care. S. Chernomat says, it was the L.A. Memorial Sports Arena on USC campus. That was going to bug me if I didn't hunt it down. Yes, thank you. That does sound like where it was. We got shuttled over from the E3 venue to there and then shuttled back. So, and Mike Deff says, I remember that moment vividly because a former colleague and I were laughing at the sharing thing, but went, wait, what? Did they just seriously say that when they said the PlayStation Plus thing? And if you actually watch, they actually say it twice. They reiterate it like a minute or two later, saying, no, really, to play online multiplayer, you need PlayStation Plus, and people still missed it. They were still going wild over the sharing thing. So that was very well done. Shohei Yoshida was a part of that, and it was a masterful thing because they didn't lie. They didn't pull wool over your eyes. You just chose what you wanted to see. And then the neat thing about especially that one that I remember is after the that press conference in general, the way that Sony did it is that after that was a party, and it was in the back half of the arena. So they only used like half of the arena. So the stage was kind of in the center of the arena. And then at the end, the stage would open up and there were demo kiosks and they had a band. And it was like the fifth time I had seen this particular band at E3. I am so tired of Jane's Addiction because every single time I went to an E3 party, oh, Jane's Addiction is playing. All right. I got a Jane's Addiction concert. Yeah, here we go. But I remember that, but also playing some of the games. They had some demo kiosks back there because back then what they would do, what Sony would do, and I believe they did this up until the end of E3 press conferences. So up until 2019 or whatever, is they were open to the public. You did not have to be attending E3 to get into the Sony press conference because it was offsite. It was at the LA Memorial Sports Arena. And so that's actually how I got in 2013. I did not get in as press in 2013. We did in 2014 because we were on the floor, but the general public was up in the the second level of the arena. And you could basically apply. You couldn't just walk up and do it. You did have to apply, but it was free ahead of time. And so we were in the, general admission line to get in. And but that is why you had so much cheering for things, because journalists at that time, we were always taught not to cheer from the press box. So we didn't. So they had to pack in gamers and fans to do all the whooping and cheering and hollering and stuff while all the journalists were sitting there typing, because it would be, it would be a snooze fest if nobody was cheering. So I actually got in as general admission a couple times to Sony. And then the last time we were invited to E3 or allowed at E3 as media, which was 2014, we were actually in the media section, but some of the more enthusiast media was behind us. So they were cheering from the press box. There were some people cheering from the press box. But anyway, those are some memories of some of my last E3s. So going back to Shohei Yoshida, he said in the interview, quote, "I've been with PlayStation from the beginning. This is my 31st year with PlayStation. And when I hit 30 years, I was thinking, it may be time for me to move on. You know, the company's been doing great. I love PS5. I love the games that are coming out on the platform. And we have new generations of management who I respect and admire. So I'm excited for the future of PlayStation. So, PlayStation is in really good hands. I thought, okay, this is my time," unquote. So I did not actually realize this, but now I know. The announcement comes on the eve of PlayStation's 30th anniversary on December 3rd. We are 2 days away, as we record this, for the 30th anniversary of PlayStation. I may have to play some PlayStation 1 games. In addition to a release of a retro line of PS5 consoles and accessories to celebrate, fans who are also wondering if Sony might be teasing additional reveals or even a mini showcase before the year is out. I knew it was the 30th anniversary. I didn't realize December 3rd was the literal date. So that's where I got. But, hey, I've got a lot of love for PlayStation. The PlayStation 1 came out around this time, and it really did shake up the industry. In an industry where Nintendo and Sega dominated, Sony came in and showed how it was done, and that's why Microsoft felt 5 years later they could do it themselves. And Dark Tetsuya does say that we have a PS5 now, so that should not be a problem, and congrats on your PS5. So if you're ever in trivia, if you ever do trivia, video game trivia, this is undoubtedly one of the questions that will be asked. Every time I have done video game trivia, this question has been asked. What is the best-selling video game console of all time? A variation of that question is asked every single time there's been video game trivia. The answer, still, to this day, is the PlayStation 2. And it has been for quite some time. The numbers have actually been updated, finally, for the first time in 10 years. Eurogamer reports that Nintendo Switch might be nipping at its heels, but PlayStation 2 continues to hold the record as the best-selling console of all time, with Sony now confirming the machine has shifted a whopping 160 million units since launching all the way back in March of 2000. This is not the first time we've heard that figure, because PlayStation boss Jim Ryan casually dropped that number during a farewell edition of the PlayStation podcast earlier this year, but Sony has updated its PlayStation history page to reflect that number, finally making it officially official. PlayStation 2's last major sales milestone was trumpeted back in 2011 when Sony revealed that the console had surpassed 150 million sales, although it only took another year for that number to jump up by a further 5 million. So while sales have undoubtedly slowed, not exactly surprising, seeing as Sony hasn't produced a PS2 since January 2013, 13 years later, the fact the console has successfully managed to shift another 5 million in the interim is still pretty wild. To put that in perspective, the PlayStation 5 is currently at 65 million lifetime sales, while PS4 has sold 117 million units. PS3 is at the 87 million mark, and PS1 had 102 million units. Nintendo's DS handheld came close to matching PS2's previously announced figure, shifting 154 million units. But it is now trails a little bit behind. As for Switch, it currently has 146 million sales. Could still reign victorious if Switch 2 does not get in its way. And Rob Roberts says, what is the best-selling DVD player of all time? That is why they got the initial surge, because they had DVD and the Dreamcast did not. And so neither did the Xbox. Neither of them played DVD movies. I believe Xbox, I think the Xbox 360, you could get the remote that unlocked the DVD, but I don't think the original Xbox did. That was one of the reasons. I also have to feel, I have to think, that especially during the time of the PS2, I will tell you something. The laser on the PS2 is crap. It was always crap. It's never not been crap. It was crap from the beginning. And so sometimes it was just easier to buy another PS2 than it was to try to get the laser repaired when it stopped reading your DVDs or it stopped reading your CDs, because some of the games were on CD. If they were black on the bottom, they were a CD, and some of them were silver on the bottom, which meant they were DVDs. And sometimes the CD laser wouldn't work anymore. Sometimes the DVD laser wouldn't work anymore. And yes, the OG Xbox did have a DVD player. All right. It played DVDs. I think you needed the... Yeah, Mike Def says you needed a remote control to do so. So the reason for that, for the DVD player thing, is that in order to have DVD playback, you need to pay money to the DVD consortium, which Sony is a part of. And every unit you sold, you needed to pay a portion of it, or some, I don't know if it was a portion of the full sale or just a flat number, to the DVD consortium. Sony was like, fine, we will pay that for every single PS2 that we sell. Great, because it also went to Sony. So it went a good portion of it went back to Sony. They weren't the only company there. Microsoft said, no, we're not going to pay Sony for every Xbox sold, but if you buy the remote control, we will pay the DVD consortium for every remote control sold, which is why you had to buy the remote control to get DVD playback, is because that's when they paid the money for the license to be able to decode DVDs and play and show them. It was in the remote control, so they didn't have to do it for every single Xbox sold. Yeah, and everybody's, as Sharon Matt says, I have three PS2s and they all still work. My launch model can't read the older purple discs. Dark Tia says, I have two Japanese PS2s, one for each laser. So, yeah, that's why I think there's 160 million. I don't think 160 million people bought a PS2. I think, you know, maybe it was closer to 130, 140 million, and then 20 million of us had to buy a second or third or fourth PS2 because the first one didn't work anymore. So, my launch day PS2 no longer exists, unfortunately. It got I had a lightning strike and it fried a lot of my electronics, including that PS2, but I do have another original fat PS2 that was sent to me by a kind listener at the time. And so I have that. So I still have my original fat PS2, or an original fat PS2. Maybe not launch day. I don't know when it was done. But that way my slide card could still work, so I could play my Beatmania import. So everything still works on it. Everything. My the first PS1 I bought, which was not launch, I did not buy the PS1 on launch, I still have that. And I don't yet need to turn it upside down for it to read discs. And Orange Wright says, I have three PS2s, one Japanese PS2 that freezes during the games, and one Japanese PS2 that reads discs once in a blue moon, and one US PS2 that still works. See, this is the thing about PlayStation, is that, you know, they broke, and it by the time they broke, it was just easier to buy another PlayStation 2 instead of trying to get the first one repaired. Because laser repairs were not easy to do. I remember... Remember, I used to do a show like this with at a repair shop, a console repair shop back in 2009, 2010. And it was all Red Ring of Death and PlayStation 2 lasers. Those were the two, the Xbox 360 Red Ring of Death and PlayStation 2 lasers. Those were the two most common repairs they were doing. So anyway, Shohei Yoshida did a lot. He was not behind a lot, any of the bad decisions that you think of at Sony, or maybe not through that many. Because he was really about the games. He wasn't really about Sony, the hardware sales, because they made a lot of missteps with the PlayStation 3. I'm pretty sure he wasn't responsible for those. He was more responsible for the games on the PlayStation 3. Like Journey, right? So thank you for everything you've done. He's not leaving the industry. He's probably going to go work at one of the think tanks or something that does analyze trends and give advice and things like that. There's a couple of people that have kind of graduated into that type of thing where they come in and assist other studios and other companies in the video game space and give advice and things like that. Something he took with him, though, is he took something away, or he's taking something away from Xbox. And you may not even remember this thing existed. But now it's not going to exist. Now it actually won't exist. Video Games Chronicle reports that Microsoft has announced plans to shut down the Xbox Avatar Editor app. Starting on January 9th, 2025, it will no longer be available on Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and Windows devices. In an FAQ, Microsoft said it was closing the app due to low engagement. They say, quote, this means players will no longer be able to access the Xbox Avatar app on Xbox consoles or PCs, including their Xbox avatars in any purchased avatar items. This will not affect the Xbox original avatars, as those will continue to work in supported Xbox 360 games, and you will still be able to edit your Xbox original avatars inside the Xbox original avatars app on Xbox consoles and Windows devices, unquote. Your Xbox avatar purchase made between November 1st, 2023, so last year, and January 9th, 2025 will be refunded once the app is closed. And Mike Def says Xbox avatars still exist. Yes, but no games use them. So the Xbox avatars, this was a thing they introduced in Xbox 360 because they wanted to kind of give you some kind of representation that you could have in games. You could put yourself in games. And there were a couple games that used this. I want to say, like, A Kingdom of Kelflings is the one that, like, they launched. They were like, look, you play as you. Your avatar is in this game, Kingdom of Kelflings, which is like a god sim type of thing, kind of like Populous or something like that. I never played it. But it was, like, on Xbox Live Gold for a bit, so I've got it. Like, I have it in my library. Have I played it? No. Will I ever play it? Probably not. But you could use your avatar in certain things like that, and you know, when you went through your friends list, you could see what they looked like, and you could make your avatar or whatever they wanted it to look like. And you could use it in games. And they did bring it over to the Xbox One, and then nobody really used it. It was a big thing with Kinect, because you could, when you were talking to some, they wanted you to have like a chat app where you could talk to someone and connect, and it would be your avatar. It would look at your thing, and if you ever wonder, you know, there was the viral moment of, you know, did you ever wonder what the bottom of an Xbox avatar shoe looks like? Bam, and he kicks his foot, and that you could see the bottom of the shoe. But people stopped using them because, and this is kind of one of the things that kind of make me sad, because 10 to 15 years ago, we had all these off the wall things with like avatars and Miiverse on the Wii, you know, and the Miis and all that stuff. And it was all about doing some interesting things with that. And now, like, what do they have on the consoles now? It's a bunch of ads. There's no, like, oh, I want, you know, let's make, you know, cute, you know, avatars that we can use across games. Let's make a little social network type of thing in the games where we can, like, put in comments in games. No, all that's gone. We don't have that anymore. And it kind of sucks, but it's also they're listening to us. And when I say us, I mean the royal us, all of us gamers. We told them we don't want it. They're shutting down the Xbox Avatar app because nobody used it. And so the message was received loud and clear. You know, there's more DLC and loot boxes and Ultimate Teams because we paid for it. Now I didn't pay for a lot of that. And chances are you didn't, but a whole lot of other people did, and the message was received. S. Sharon and Matt says, I paid to get a hockey jersey on my avatar, so I helped them somewhat. I imagine folks stopped buying add-ons for it. Because no games nowadays use the avatar. You probably don't realize you have an avatar, because it's been de-emphasized everywhere, but early on, they were using the avatars. Like in the early, early launch Xbox One games, there were a couple things that would use your avatar. But they were trying to make it kind of like the Miis. And it didn't take off because Microsoft is not Nintendo. But even if you notice, Nintendo's kind of also gotten rid of the Miis. You know, you don't see the Miis that much anymore. So It's something that we didn't really react to, and now that we kind of see like the hellscape that the consoles have become now, at least, you know, Microsoft especially, where like it's all ads on the front page and nothing cool like your little avatar or anything. I kind of miss some of that where they were trying to make things fun. And they're no longer making the console experience fun. The console experience exists to serve you ads and eventually get you into the game that you paid for. And as Jeremy Matt says, I miss PlayStation Home. I do too. And PlayStation Home was ahead of its time, because if PlayStation Home had just stuck around for like 5 more years, and when the PlayStation VR came out, it would have been the VR chat of our time. Mike Def says, I can't remember if I bought something for my avatar. Probably not, aside from the free stuff, which sucks, because I would have loved to have seen, and about Miis, I would have loved to have seen Tamagotchi Life get the Miitomo treatment. And about this, the avatar stuff, you got to realize something. You could buy things for your avatar, but you could also unlock things for your avatar by playing a game. If you got some achievements, especially on the Xbox 360, some achievements came with a piece of avatar clothing. So you could actually wear your achievements on your avatar. So that was probably what people did more with their avatar, was they showed off what they had gotten in game, because it was a reward. You could get you could just get an avatar reward for doing something. It wasn't necessarily tied to an achievement. There was a way you could get avatar items from your games, which was a great concept. But ultimately, we, the gamers, in general, didn't care. SJR One of Matt also misses Game Room on Xbox 360 and 1v100, because that was an amazing, amazing thing that they were able to pull off, and they're never going to try it again because gamers didn't take to it. Questbuster says, I had a Japan account for PlayStation Home to collect stuff exclusive to the region, like an R-Type model for your apartment and a Hatsune Miku stand-up. So, yeah, there was PlayStation Home was great. They'd had a very good community at its core, but it was a small community, and that was the problem, and that's why they shut it down, unfortunately. And then 5 years later, it would have been like the poster child for PlayStation VR had it still been around, but it wasn't. And so now other things have taken over, and we don't have anything like that on PlayStation, and I have not touched my PSVR 2 in quite some time. We are going to take a very quick music break, and then we will come back and talk to Rob about memories of PlayStation, I guess. Because I guess we should be reminiscing a little bit about PlayStation, because they're going to be turning 30 years old in 2 days. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here in the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Hello, this is DMN from Seattle, Washington. You're listening to the only man who cannot win a single game of Tetris, Bobby Blackwell. Here's Bobby.
Hey, the Tetris Forever was last week. That show was last week. Why are you crashing the DMN, why are you crashing the bumper this week? I talked about Tetris last week. He's not wrong. If you want to leave a bumper, all you got to do is contact me and send me an MP3 of just your voice or a video with just your voice, and I'll choose which DMCA violation I'll put behind it about coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show, and preferably not talking about true facts about my gaming experience. But yeah, we can just leave a bumper, and then I won't be playing the stuff before. So usually we will, like, I've got a little thing in the little show notes, be like, hey, like, let's, you know, I'll take a call. I usually don't get the time because I wind up talking too long, and I do want to keep this to just an hour. But I will mention some of the chat that we were having, because I played I play Overclock Remix during the breaks, and that's, I don't put that on the podcast because I don't exactly have the rights to put it on the podcast. I have the rights to stream it on Twitch, which is why we were able to do it on Twitch, but I don't put it in the podcast. But it was a French term, and I'm not going to repeat the French because I don't know how that's pronounced, but I made the joke to everybody that it was like, yeah, you know, I'm not going to try to pronounce it. And they're like, yeah, no. And I think Esther and Matt said, no self-respecting Southerner speaks French. And I was like, oh, you just wait till you hear how we pronounce some things. So we've got a street here in Atlanta. And it is, and I'm going to try to actually pronounce it the correct way, as in the European way. But it's a Spanish explorer. Ponce de Leon. Might be is kind of close to the, because I've never said it that way, because we just call it Ponce de Leon is like this big Ponce, and we've even got Ponce City Market and stuff like that, and so it's Ponce, and people just, whenever you could tell somebody's from out of town, where is Ponce City Market, we don't know, it's Ponce. And then I said, and I know pod culture is probably here because my wife's from Indiana. And I'm like, yeah, the town in Indiana called Versailles is not pronounced the way you think here. It's Versailles here in America. It's Versailles, Indiana. It's not Versailles. So don't ask how we pronounce things. Don't ask me to speak French because I'm terrible at it. So coming up next, actually, we're not going to talk about city names, is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California, that talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them and see what's going on there. Sacramento, are you there?
So we're not going to talk about not Lebanon, Oregon, but Lebanon?
No, I mean, well, we have an Albany here in Georgia, And I think, and I actually don't know. There's a town in Georgia. I actually don't know how it's actually pronounced here in Georgia. Mm-hmm. It's where The Walking Dead is filmed, and it's Senoia, and it's not Sinwa. And I don't know if it's Senoia. I can't remember how we pronounce it, but it's completely different than what you think.
Senoia, yeah, that, yeah. There's all sorts of. There's another. There's Lebanon is in Oregon. What's in Oregon? There's a. You would think it's Tigard. Every time you see it, it's Tigard. There's all sorts of interesting little places. A street that my old high school was on years and years ago. Everybody called it Kirby Way, but any GPS system is going to say Serby, C-I-R-B-Y, oh, yeah. But we all called it Kirby.
Oh, yeah. No, we've got my GPS, you know, still can't figure out. There's a town that's up in the mountains. It's a beautiful town. Mm-hmm. It's called Dahlonega. Everything's like Dahlonega. And we're like, what? Dahlonega? No, it's Dahlonega.
Well, because of that, sometimes people will start copying what they hear on their GPS. Mm-hmm. Another funny GPS, because I use this in my show hosting sometimes. I'll do a little bit where I'm asking people on stage, where are you from? And we have a suburb outside of Sacramento called Placerville is the name of it. Okay. That's how you actually pronounce it. Mm-hmm. But the GPS systems call it Placerville.
Okay.
And so I always crack a joke and I say, oh, every time I drive through there, my GPS says it's Placerville. And I go, yep, this is a place. Kind of one of those blink and you miss it sort of sleepy towns, but yeah.
No, my favorite is we have one of the movie theaters that I used to go to with a bunch of my friends was in a shopping center called Perimeter Point, except it was P-O-I-N-T-E is how it's pronounced.
Perimeter Pointy.
So, it actually says Perimeter Point.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
What the GPS says. It's Perimeter Point, but it Point. And so I always yell Point every time it takes me in there.
Well, at least you're not having a GPS system read the Japanese release date segment here on this program, so.
I stopped reading release dates 20 years ago. I actually did read release dates very early on this show.
I remember those for
five episodes, and I'm like, nobody cares. And then I joined it when y'all read them, and I'm like, all right, cool. We'll just, you know, have them there.
Yeah.
So the PlayStation, I knew it was turning 30. I didn't realize it was turning 30 on Tuesday.
I thought it already had, but the timetable, because if I remember right, Japan got the system for the holidays, I'm using my quotey fingers, and because obviously it's a different situation there, but then the U.S. got it, I think, in spring. I don't think we had it for the holidays the first year. I think we had it in spring,
because
I remember, you know, I went to school with a bunch of rich kids. I wasn't one of them, but I went to school with the rich kids, and I remember the rich kids rubbing it in around the time graduation was coming up that they were getting PlayStations as, you know, their end of the year gift. And, you know, then asking for tips on Mortal Kombat, which I think was one of the launch games, was Mortal Kombat Trilogy or 3 or one of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't pick it up until Final Fantasy VII. And it wasn't even when Final Fantasy VII launched.
I didn't pick it up about until then either. I think I had it before, but I knew I wanted it because of Final Fantasy VII. Mm-hmm. And I distinctly remember my mother gave me cash for Christmas one year. It's kind of like, hey, I'm going to give you cash so that you can save it, you know, type of thing. I don't know what she was trying to teach me, but I immediately went to a store called The Warehouse, rest in peace, mm-hmm. no longer exists. And I bought myself a PlayStation with, quotey finger time, my own money that I just got for the holidays. My mother was pissed. Pissed. And I was like, you said I could spend it on whatever I want, and I want a PlayStation.
Yeah, my parents had, because they were still buying me things at the time, got me a Nintendo 64. And so that was like, they're like, you have the Nintendo 64, because I got it for Mario Kart. And that was like right... So Mario Kart 64 was not a launch title for the Nintendo 64. No. But when it came out, I bought the Nintendo 64 and Mario Kart 64. And I was... everybody's favorite on the dorm, because I was the guy with the Nintendo 64 with four controllers. So I even have pictures. Like, I actually have a picture of people in my dorm room, a four-player Mario Kart race on a Commodore 64 monitor, because that was my TV. So it's a 14-inch TV. But I had a big sound system, because I had a receiver and big speakers. So I had great sound. I even had surround sound. And, you know, because I had two speakers in the back of my dorm room on this little tiny 14-inch TV. And we're all playing Mario Kart on it, and it was great.
It's really fun. I know we've talked about this before, so I know you've heard this, but I don't think the listeners have, where these random parts of our lives intersect. Okay, so I wasn't the one that owned Nintendo 64 and Mario Kart. Those are the guys upstairs. But I still had a decent amount of people coming over to my dorm room to play Super Nintendo original Mario Kart, because I have my Super Nintendo, on a Commodore 64 monitor, yep. which I also used as my primary Nintendo monitor at that time. And then it kind of turned into, at some point, Duke Nukem 3D, because, you know, the dorms was a very confined space, but we all had different phone numbers to our different rooms, mm-hmm. right? So it was really fun because I could play Duke Nukem 3D with my literal neighbor mm-hmm. calling up on the phone and just doing the direct connect like we used to do back in the day. And we would have guys that would run back and forth between the two rooms and try mm-hmm. to ruin it and be like, oh, he's over there. Go get him over there or whatever. And then he'd run to the other room. Oh, he's over there. He's going to get you over there. So mm-hmm. that they would just run it back and forth between the two rooms telling us where each other were at. That was good times.
Yeah, I did a lot of that as well. Dark Sarkar says, I was already an adult. So, I was in college. I was a broke college student.
Yeah.
And so even though I think technically, yes, I was an adult. I think I was 20 at the time when I finally did get the PlayStation 1. And so I'm finally like revealing my age here. But yeah, I still needed parents' help.
Same thing. I was 18, but I was a dependent still.
Yes. So. My parents still claimed me on the taxes.
Yes, very that.
So yeah, and as Jeremy Matt says, yes, I'm 29. I am still 29, but I was not yet 29 when the PlayStation 1 came out. But yeah, no, for me, it was Final Fantasy VII was really the reason. And then I Final Fantasy Tactics had come out right after that. And then, believe it or not, the NCAA football games were the other games I got on PlayStation. And then everything else, I think I was still Nintendo or PC because I had a good PC to play, like Wing Commander and stuff, I think is what I played a lot in college was the Wing Commander games.
I fell out of gaming for a couple years just with everything else that was going on in my personal life. I know this usually surprises people that, yeah, I did kind of I kind of fell out of current gaming for a little bit, probably towards, I would say, around 98 to around 2000 was probably what it picked. So it was only a couple of years. But like I wasn't really around for the hype of the PS2 launch, or the Dreamcast mm-hmm. launch, or any of that stuff. What actually brought me back into video games was when I discovered Dance Dance Revolution. Mm-hmm. And the first time I played DDR was at the 25th anniversary Rocky Horror Picture Show convention in Las Vegas.
Okay.
In the year 2000. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then so probably then started to pick back up into video games in 2001. And that would have been around the time I first met Dark Sakura, Loki. Mm-hmm. We were doing the Roswell Golfland stuff, right? And then the next year, 2002, OLR starts. So, yeah, it's kind of wild how fast things accelerate in that kind of time frame. Yeah.
Yeah, and now they don't seem to be accelerating all that much. Like, if you look at a game that was released 10 years ago and today, you can't really tell that 10 year like that a lot of time has passed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we kind of hit that point where it's like there's only so much better looking the games can get. And sure, there's going to be talk about, you know, AI is already the talk about how, like, you know, right. AI can like render graphics things on the fly. And I'm not talking about, you know, I'm talking about more as a tool for a rendering system, not like a generative type of thing. You know, that they're that part of like graphics cards and stuff sort of use that to sort of render the higher end graphics. And so now it'll be about where can that kind of push us. But, you know, our eye can only do so much. But we always like to joke it's one step closer to the holodeck. So what's it going to bring to, you know, glasses and headspace technology and that sort of thing someday? I think, you know, I know we've kind of talked about VR maybe missed the boat, but... You know, VR came around the first time in the 90s mm-hmm. and sort of had you remember Lawnmower Man? Of course you do, but the listeners, you know, it sort of came and went as a flash then. And I would say it wasn't necessarily a flash this time, but I think it's one of those things where it's like, I think VR comes back someday when the tech is a little more. We're getting a lot closer now with these new Oculus headsets that really just kind of like go on your face and so forth. I think especially as that really gets smaller and smaller, you know, and as we see what Apple's doing with kind of blending that line between what is VR, what is AR, you know, and that sort of thing. I think there's still the best is yet to come in that department when we talk to gaming getting closer to the holodeck.
I'm actually trying to look while you were talking about that. I'm trying to find a picture because I knew I had pictures of my dorm room, and I'm trying to see if I had them digitized and where they were.
I feel like you've shown them to me at some point.
Yeah, so now so I was I'm looking for them to see if I can. See if I can find, because I know what I named the file. There it is. I actually found. I'm opening it up.
I was gonna say, I almost positive you showed it to me online somehow. Not like when I was at your house or something.
No, yeah, no. But I found it. So what I'm gonna do, everybody, and I'm even gonna dox exactly what room I lived in college, my senior year of college.
Well, to be fair, you're not there anymore.
I know. I'm not there anymore. Some other kid
It'll
is
be a
there.
Historical landmark someday.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to do that. And I apologize for people on that are listening on the podcast. But let's see here. How am I going to do this? Okay.
We can describe what we're looking at.
Yeah.
When, we can use alt text in that regard once we get it to come up. I'm on a delay, though, so I'm not going to see it as fast as
I know.
Do.
I'm getting the thing in for the... I'm adding it to the OBS, because so if you've never done this before, y'all, there's like you have to go like in OBS, because I don't have it like something I can just like quickly share. You have to actually go.
He
like,
doesn't set it up lazy like I do, where I just have a right monitor capture and then whatever's on the right monitor, and all my controls are on the left monitor, so no peeking.
Yeah,
but I have a right monitor capture for OLR for like classic game of the week B roll and other random things that come up if we have to show a tweet or something. I can pull it up and capture right monitor. So I know you have a very different setup where you load a lot of things manually.
All right, so let's see here, and then I'll put this here so it works. All right. So that should do it. And so now people can probably see over here to my left, there's actually a couple pictures, but you can see like the tiny ass Commodore 64 monitor. And then like under it's like a VCR, a LaserDisc player is there. So I had a LaserDisc player, but you can see there's like some you can see the two speakers. One's next to the bed and one's on the shelf, on the second shelf there. And my old computer and, some shirts and things like that. So, yeah, that was my college setup.
I'm cracking up at just how many freaking electronics are underneath the monitor. I know the podcast listeners can't see this. Yeah. But he's got this full on sound thing. I think, like you said, LaserDisc player is probably a VCR in there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You got like all these things sitting under the monitor really cracks me up.
Yeah.
Dark Soccer is saying your dorm was way bigger than mine. Is it the type of thing where photography sort of deceives, though? Because I actually would argue it does not look that big.
It is. It was 9 feet by 10 feet.
Okay.
But
were you by yourself, though?
Yeah. So this was one of the six single rooms.
You.
Yeah,
lucky you.
This was one of the six single rooms in that new dorm, because they had actually just renovated that dorm and it was the first year it opened. I was actually the first person to actually get the key to my room because I actually worked for UGA Housing. This was at University of Georgia. It was Reed Hall. So it was Reed Hall, for anybody that knows UGA lore. It's right next to the stadium. And they had renovated, put AC in there. Because AC didn't air conditioning did not exist in this dorm until they did that. So I was the first one to move in, and it was a single. They took out the communal bathrooms, because a lot of dorms, you have like for each floor, there's a bathroom in the center. This, you shared a bathroom with the room next to you. So there was a bathroom in between the two rooms. So a lot of them, there would be two and two. So four people would share one bathroom that was connected to each other, and you would go in and have to make sure that you locked the other guy's door before you use the shower or whatever.
That reminds me a lot of how it was set up where my friends went to school. Is that a Sephiroth poster above your bed?
It is. That is actually, it's a wall scroll. It's not a poster, Bob. It's a wall scroll, and I actually do still have it. It was actually even hung up in my last house over the fireplace.
Is it you? Are you XXX Sephiroth underscore 420?
Yes, I am.
XXX.
That was my first gamer tag. Then I became Bobby Black Wolf. But yeah,
I see Bobby Sephiroth Wolf.
So that was my dorm. But that's not the one where everybody played Mario Kart. That's actually like a physical picture that I don't have scanned and I don't have it near me. But
okay, that's the one I've seen. I don't think I saw what you've just showed. You showed me like a physical picture
because
I remember seeing you in college on that. Yeah.
And somebody asked, "What's on the rug?" That I still have in the house. It was a Georgia Bulldogs big rug. Because it was a hardwood floor and, you want a rug down. We actually have that in my sunroom, in my current house. I literally still have that exact same rug and we have it in our sunroom.
Wow. So. Okay. That's held up very well over the years. I know what room that is and what you're talking about.
Yeah. So the rug.
Wow, okay. Yep. Now I see it.
Yeah. Now you see it. And so, so you've seen that exact same rug.
I have. That's funny. I had to share a dorm room with somebody, but he was never there because he was rushing a fraternity. Mm-hmm. The guy I was roommates with in college, and I couldn't have been more different. Like, mm-hmm. I don't, anyway, but our rooms were like S shaped. It was really funky. So that way, like one part of the S was like one person's area and the other part of the S was the other person's area. And so like my TV was like up against, like if you picture like how an S curves, it was up against like kind of like where you would see one of the curves.
Yeah.
So that was it was laid out a little more funky, but I did have to share it with somebody else. And I don't think I have any pictures of that time. If I do, they're long since I threw them out a long time ago, I'm sure. I've not been very good on keeping track of pictures over the years, which is why I'm glad we have digital libraries now and all that, because that way I don't lose them.
Yeah, no, I actually rescued from, I think, an old hard drive. I found it I kept some of my old hard drives, and I didn't have that picture I just showed you until a couple years ago. Because I found like an old hard drive that had a whole bunch of pictures from from like the 2000s. So,
nice.
But back up your stuff and print out photos, because those cloud things aren't going to last forever, unfortunately.
No, they won't.
And so what else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
Well, that is a great question, because, you know, it's actually I feel like there's been a bit of news this week, all things considered. It's a holiday in most of the U.S. and all that stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about Pokemon, the trading card game. I know you finally lightly have dabbled in this a little bit, but we're going to talk about some of the things that were upcoming were leaked, although they're already in the game. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how did they get leaked and all that good stuff, and what can that mean for future indications. We'll also talk about some new patents that Nintendo has been filing, which again could indicate what's coming to the Switch too, but it could also be a nothing burger, as these patents sometimes are. But you know, on a week like this, we'll talk about it a little bit more. And who's Nintendo going after next? We'll talk about that. Lawsuit.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is coming up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over here at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. Or you can find me on Blue Sky at BobbyBlackWolf.com. I share some things throughout the week over there, and would love to see you over there. Or you can find us on our website, VogNetwork.com, and on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make all this work without people who go above and beyond. You being here is really all that we ask for, but those of you who do go a little bit above and beyond here on Twitch do help us keep the lights on, which is really all we're looking for. Thank you so much for resubscribing, Tiger Claw and Fifth Dream. Thank you so much for resubscribing to the VOG Network Twitch channel. I am going to hit the button so I can get out of here and stop reminiscing about my old dorm room that was messy and that I shared it with everybody. We're not going to share that again. Anyway, I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.